Welcome back, everybody, to the Ozone Football Podcast. Rob Ogden here alongside Tony Gerdeman, here to break down the Buckeyes' win over Illinois, talk about the last two weeks of the regular season. It's getting exciting here. We're coming down to the home stretch.
Yeah, it goes quickly and picks up speed as we get closer.
Yeah. So this past week against Illinois, Ohio State gets the closer-than-expected win. But Carlos Hyde goes absolutely off, rushing 24 times for 246 yards, four touchdowns. His 10.2 yards per carry sets a new school record. The thing that was interesting to me about it is, as that game got closer than expected, mm-hmm. they leaned more and more on Carlos Hyde.
Yeah, we've seen that a few times this year where, you know, they sort of, towards the middle of the season when we said it looked like last year's offense because they were just, you know, focused more on the handing the ball off, and you know, I think maybe it was even with Jordan Hall. But you know, once things get a little touchy, then you go back to what works, and I mean, it was working all day long.
Yeah, Dontre Wilson got the one carry, but other than that, Hyde was the only other Ohio State running back that got the ball. And I think that's something we haven't seen in a while, just because they haven't played a game where they needed to keep feeding them like that. But I think it's telling because I mean, it shows like in these closer games down the stretch, maybe against Michigan. And a Big Ten championship game and a bowl game, that's kind of the blueprint of what they're going
to
be doing.
Right. I think that's why so many people want to see Ohio State against Michigan State, just to see that sort of, you know, because they would rely on that, you would think, for most of the game. And, you know, it's worked all season long. Sometimes it feels like they wait too long to go to it because they want to throw the ball around in the first half because they know it'll be out of hand in the second half, so they'll have to run it. But, I mean, it's so effective right now that you can't stray too far from it.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, is that what you see happening going forward? Just Hyde being, the lead ball carrier for Ohio State without much Wilson, Elliott, Hall mixed in?
Not this week, but
I think in the games that count.
I think they would be really comfortable with doing that against Michigan. You know, and until he doesn't provide for you, I mean, you're going to keep going to him, don't you think?
Well, yeah, there's no reason not to.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, as long as he doesn't give you that reason, and he hasn't yet, I mean, we could talk about his ball security and how it's, you know, but, you know, we don't want to jinx him or anything, but, I mean, you have no concerns when he has the ball in his hands, really.
Right.
You know?
The amazing thing, really, is that he was able to pick up the 246 yards even after being suspended for the first whole two plays of the game.
Right, yeah.
That was tough. To come back from that and still be able to rush for 246 yards, that's impressive.
It's a pretty good, to come off the bench like that, there's going to be a sixth man award somewhere. You know, and it's, you know, just like Archie Griffin when he rushed for 246 yards against North Carolina, which was the third, you know, which is now the third best total ever, you know, that was off the bench.
Right.
So, you know, you figure two of the four best totals in school history have come off the bench. By players not good enough to start on their team.
Right. I guess we should mention Hyde was, I guess he was, he didn't get the start because of an academic reason. Rumor has it he skipped class. Urban wouldn't confirm that, but he misses two plays. So I don't think it's an issue going forward. But for the season, he's at 947 yards, on pace to surpass 1,000 this Saturday against Indiana. If he does so, he'd become the first 1,000-yard back under Urban Meyer, and Ohio State's first since 2010. Think he gets it on Saturday?
Does he get it in the first quarter? I think that's the better question.
Yeah, I think in first half.
Yeah, first half, because he probably won't carry it in the first quarter because they're going to be throwing the ball around. But, you know, maybe if he had one more carry against Illinois at the end, depending on where it came from, it would have been, you know, another 50-yarder. But, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt.
Yeah, I think we can almost guarantee that he's going to get this because we know that he wants it and Urban Meyer wants it.
Yep.
And, I mean, Urban might not admit to it, but you know he wants that 1,000-yard back. He hates being asked about that.
Yeah, especially on the recruiting trail. And, you know, so the offensive line wants it, and Urban loves his offensive line, so he might do it for that reason alone. You know, that might be the biggest reason he'd want it.
I mean, Urban's asked about it. I mean, not weekly, but it's fairly often, and you can like almost see it like in his face when he's asked. Like he hates being asked about it.
Yeah, because last year when Braxton Miller finally became his first 1,000-yard runner, then it immediately became, well, you've never had a 1,000-yard tailback,
right?
So you know, to get this out of the way, you know, the sooner the better for him, I think.
And like in the Purdue game, you know, Hyde left the game with, he had like 80-some yards, and Meyer put him back in there for one play and told him, you go get 100 yards, this is your last chance,
right.
You go get it.
So, I mean, it shows that he's aware of numbers.
Right, exactly, you know. Exactly, if nothing else. So if he does become that, well, which we expect him to, is Hyde a Heisman contender?
No, because the three missed games, I think, just rules him out automatically. I mean, look at Braxton. He's playing as well, better than he has last year when he was the number five guy, and he's not even in the discussion because he missed, you know, the most of three games. I mean, don't you? I mean, do you?
No, I agree. I don't think they have a chance for it. Yeah. But if, say, if they hadn't missed those three games, do you think, I mean, would he be up for it?
Yeah, I think so, because you have to figure he would have dominated those three games.
I mean, he could. I mean, if he had played those three, I think it's reasonable to believe that he could have over 1,500 yards.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, if both he and Miller had played and not missed any time, you know, who do they steal from each other? I mean, does one have the edge over the other?
Well, I was going to ask you that. If you're Ohio State, and this is all hypothetical because neither of these guys are going to win the Heisman because of the time they missed, but if you're Ohio State and you decide you're going to market one of these guys and you're going to put all your resources behind one of them, which one is it?
I think you'd go with the senior.
Yeah?
You know, because maybe that gives, you know, Braxton Miller more incentive to come back or something of that nature, because, you know, the way Hyde carried the team last year at the end and the way he's done it this year, I think they'd side more with him, even though it may not be as flashy as going with a guy who was the preseason number one candidate.
Right.
That's hard to go away from as well, especially when you consider the recruiting impact that it can have and the notoriety that it brings to your school. It's hard to go away from the guy who led at the beginning. But, you know, eventually the stuff shakes out and you see who is producing.
Yeah.
And if you compare Miller's numbers to the other contenders, they're not close. But if you would compare Hyde's numbers and impact to anybody else, you know, he deserves to be up there.
And we've talked about this before, but is Hyde now the most important player on this team?
I think in November, you know, that's when it all, you know, that's where every inch counts. That's where, you know, the tough yards come. And the offensive line talked this week about how defenses are starting to pick up on what they're doing.
Right.
You know, so things aren't getting as easy, but yet, here we go, Carlos Hyde just ran for 246 yards. The offensive line is talking about how it's more difficult now than it was, and Hyde just continues to make it look easy. You know, but then Urban Meyer said, 75% of Hyde's runs are reads by Braxton.
Right.
So, you know, he deserves some credit there as well.
Sure.
I think either way, you know, who do you give it to? I mean, who's more important in your opinion?
Who's more important? I think it's Hyde. Just because, I mean, the level between Hyde and everybody else is a lot bigger than the level between Miller and Guyen, in my opinion.
Right, because Miller could be making these reads for another running back, and they're not cranking out 246 yards or 160 or whatever.
Did you hear who Urban called the best offensive player on the team?
I don't think so. Let me guess. Jack Muhort?
That is correct.
Yeah.
He called Jack Muhort the best offensive player on the team. He said they missed him a lot when he was out because he hyperextended his knee on Wednesday. So he was, I think they planned to pull him out of the game. He sat for part of two quarters. He was over riding a stationary bike. But going back to the offensive line, how much of Hyde's success can be attributed to the offensive line? Because I don't think there's any question that this is the best offensive line in the Big Ten.
Right.
But one of the best offensive lines in the country.
I think you could also say that Hyde is the best running back in the Big Ten, perhaps.
You could.
But, I mean, I think every coach says it all starts up front. And without the line, you know, you can only do so much. I think he would still do pretty good. But that offensive line just makes everything so available, you know. And what Andrew Norwell was the offensive player of the week with Carlos Hyde this past week. So, you know, it's all tied together.
What about, in your memory, where does this offensive line rank among Ohio State lines?
I think you can go back to the mid-90s when Ohio State had Orlando Pace and Corey Stringer at tackle.
Yeah.
You know, and they would do whatever they want. You know, some defenses wouldn't even put a defensive end over Orlando Pace because there's no point, so they would just, you know, put him somewhere else.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, 1996, Pepe Pearson rushed for 1,500 yards behind Orlando Pace.
Yeah.
Pepe Pearson, I think, went undrafted. So, you know, that's some pretty stellar blocking when you can get that guy, you know, 150 yards a game.
Yeah. What about Hyde, last 10 years among Ohio State running backs?
I said earlier in the season that with this offensive line, Beanie would have gone for 2,000 this year. But Hyde may have gone for 2,000 this year, you know, playing 14 games and being healthy.
It's possible. I mean, because really, he played that Florida A&M game, but what did he have, like 30 yards or something?
I think he was like 50 yards on maybe like 5 or 6 carries.
I think it was like, maybe 4 or 5 carries. So, I mean, it wasn't really a full game. So it's more like he missed like 3.5.
Yeah, I think he's more reliable than Beanie in every sense. You know, he, you know, if he's pulling himself out of a game, it's just because he ran for 20 yards three straight carries. You know, so he's getting a breather. You know, he's not getting dinged up. You know, Beanie had fumble issues.
Has Hyde fumbled this season?
I don't think so. I think you'd have to go back to maybe like the Wisconsin game last year that wasn't actually a fumble.
Yeah.
But that, you know, you saw it come out and he recovered it quickly. But, I mean, you don't even think about that stuff with him because it's not an issue.
Right.
So if you go to him, I think Antonio Pittman is one of the most underrated tailbacks in Ohio State history.
Yeah.
But even he left because Beanie, you know, he knew he was going to lose carries to Wells in 2007. So.
Right. So how are you ranking him?
Oh, man.
You got the microphone. You gotta rank him.
I think I go Hyde number one just because he's more reliable. And this is, of course, you know, you're calling a player reliable who was suspended for, you know, getting into an issue and then also missing, you know, class time or whatever and getting suspended this time, but or held out, I guess, a one-play suspension or two-play
suspension.
Two-play
suspension, hey.
You know, Urban Meyer. Yeah, I don't want to downplay it because that's serious.
So you're going Hyde number one, Beanie number two?
Yeah.
Pittman number three?
Yeah. And then Lydell Ross, like 18.
Yeah, I guess he would qualify. He was 03.
03, 04.
So does that qualify? That's 10 years, yeah.
Yeah.
He'd qualify.
Yeah. Now, the real question is if you go back to 2002.
Where do you flip her at? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, because back then I thought Claret was the best thing. Was the best running back I had seen at Ohio State, and you know I was in college when Eddie George was here. So,
right.
I mean, he always made the first person miss. I mean, he was a smart player.
Claret was a game changer. Yeah, I mean, he was a game changer.
Yeah, I mean that team with a quarterback who really, you know, wasn't all that great. You know, he was a game manager, whatnot. Yeah, but I mean, they were 14-0 that season and. Like you said, Claret was the game changer, and he set the tone, you know, first game of the season.
So where are you putting Claret?
Well, see, then the thing is, after seeing Beanie Wells in 2007, I thought he was the best thing that, you know, I thought he was became better than Claret.
Well, you just always like the latest, greatest thing.
I don't know. Maybe, but let's go Eddie George.
Going all the way back to 95.
Yeah, no, but I think for what Carlos Hyde has done this season, he definitely, you know, you could put him at the top, and I don't think it's, you know, an invalid argument at all.
No, I think there's an argument. If we're going Claret, Beanie, and Hyde, I think there's a valid argument for each of them at the top that, I mean, it just comes down to opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Point. Yeah.
As good of a game he had, he did have his first two rushes for loss.
Yeah.
Which was, I mean, that was crazy that he had gone this far without losing any yards on a carry. But he did twice against Illinois on Saturday.
Actually, just once for 2 yards.
Oh, it was once for 2 yards?
Yeah.
I thought it was twice. Maybe one time he was stopped for no gain.
Yeah, no, he had a no gain and, yeah.
Okay.
Believe me, I'm watching this. It's my favorite stat in college football.
Oh, okay.
It's gone
okay.
Now.
No, I was there. I thought I saw it happen live, but I didn't look at the stat sheet, so you're probably right. So he did it once.
Yep.
But still, it was the first time he'd done it all season, which is an impressive stat. Mm-hmm. Because, you get hit in the backfield, but just the ability to drive the ball forward past the line of scrimmage.
Right, because... Yeah, it wasn't the first time he was hitting the backfield.
Right.
You know, and
he's one of those guys that always seems to fall forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can spin out of a tackle even as he's going down.
Right.
But yeah, it's you don't often stone him. Chris Borland did it twice, you know, which you know, against Wisconsin and you know, but he still managed to get forward.
Yeah, the run that kind of embodies all of that is the one that he rushed for the touchdown that got called back.
Mm-hmm.
He started at, like, the 5, like, went down and, like, was, like, crawling and, like, pulling, like, 4 defenders with him.
Yeah, no, I was watching that one on TV and, you know, I saw him get stopped and I start typing and looking down at the computer.
And he's still gone.
Yeah.
He's still gone. Like,
and then you hear it's a touchdown and you're like, what?
Almost horizontally to the ground. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what everyone in the press box was like, wait, he scored? Like, we thought he was down at, like, the 3.
Yeah, no, it's fun to watch him.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it is. Yeah. Braxton, though, not the best game for Braxton. It was windy, but... he only completes 13 balls, 150 yards, 2 touchdowns. Herman said yesterday he thought the wind played a factor, but also that Braxton was a little bit off. I don't know, what did you think watching it?
Well, anytime you threw the ball downfield, I mean, you didn't know...
Overthrow it, underthrow it.
It was pretty drastic, too. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, Herman said it was probably a coaching decision to poor coaching. And yeah. then you look back to the times that, like in 2006 when Jim Tressel had Troy Smith in at Illinois, they kept it on the ground with Antonio Pittman. He carried it like 32 times
for
50 yards.
They played a
close
game there in 2006.
Yeah, it was like a 7-point game.
If I remember, there was an onside kick in that game.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like you have your Heisman Trophy front runner, and you still know that, you know, we don't really want to throw here because you just never know.
So is the win really much, is it really that big of a factor, you think?
I think, I mean, if you go and look at Braxton's games this year, and yeah. I agree with Tom Herman, he was off because, you know, I mean, even normal throws, you know, short and intermediate weren't crisp.
Right.
But, I mean, if you go look at his season stats and his game log, I mean, there's going to be one that sticks out as like, whoa, you know, this is off.
Right.
And I think the wind definitely played a factor. You know, maybe if the wind isn't as bad, he connects on a couple of those deep passes, and now he's got 230 yards passing instead of 150, and, you know, it doesn't look so bad.
Yeah. And Braxton and Urban both said after the game that it was a factor. Braxton said that it was actually... I mean, it had a fairly big effect on his game, and that they tried to stick to the short passage just because, like you said, the deep balls weren't working. And Meyer said, I don't know if Meyer attributed. Well, he said that the weather made it. It was inconducive to throwing the football. He said at some point you just have to make plays, so that's why they kept going to Hyde.
Well, I think the Illinois defense knew that as well because, you know, if you know that nothing deep is really going to be.
Right.
Accurate, you don't have to worry too much. I mean, you can focus more on, you know, everything's going to be right there in front of us.
Well, the thing that was interesting, too, is Meyer said it hurt us more than it hurt them.
Mm.
And Illinois seemed to be able to throw the ball just fine. I mean, I don't know how that compares to what they've done the rest of the year. But, you know, Shieldhouse completed 33 passes, 288 yards. He also threw the ball 50 times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe is that because they're used to playing in it? Or
I mean, it's, you know... Shieldhouse is a four-year starter, so this is probably his, you know, 30th or 35th game,
right.
you know, there. And so, obviously, he's more comfortable throwing it.
Right.
You know, he still wasn't, I mean, I think his interception to C.J. Barnett early, you know, might have been, you know, a product of the wind as well as, you know, the pressure.
Yeah.
But I think it's sort of, you know, there's a reason they call it home field advantage.
Right.
You know, you're used to the conditions.
Ohio State gives up 35 points. That was the most they've given up all season. But the defense was playing without quite a few regulars. Two starting linebackers out. Obviously, Christian Bryan out. Joey Bosa left, I think, at the beginning of the second half.
Yeah.
How much, in your mind, did, especially the linebackers being out, how much did that affect, you know, Illinois' ability to run the ball? Because they ran better than they have.
Yeah, and they were getting some decent runs, like 12, 13-yard runs there all in a row, and it was because, you know, I don't know if it was maybe Cameron Williams at least once just completely whiffed on a tackle. Ferguson
back-to-back.
And I wasn't sure. I don't remember if it was Williams the first time.
It was Williams both times.
So, you know, that's you know, your number three weak side linebacker who is now plugged into the middle.
Which he's, I mean, has he ever taken a snap at middle before this week?
He had played it in practice, you know, in the preseasons, but I don't know that he's necessarily gotten time at it in a game.
Right.
So, I mean, it wasn't an ideal situation, especially for all the short passing that Illinois likes to do, and that was effective as well.
Right. And the thing, the interesting thing is we've talked about the linebackers before and whether or not the depth is going to hurt them. And we've always kind of said, well, you know, they play so much in the nickel anyway. They don't, you know, and if they can just stick with those guys, it's not going to really matter for the season. But then two of those guys go out. When you're missing two of them, it kind of mattered.
Yeah, because, I mean, you had Joe Berger out there, you know, you're rotating him and with Cameron Williams, and they're just looking for something, you know, and man, it's not an easy position to be in. Meyer said they were traveling, you know, four walk-ons who had never even played, and if something happened, they were going to be in the game.
Right. I mean, they had their travel roster out there. They're already down, I think he said 11 players are out for the season, plus the guys we just mentioned who are out, you know, just for that game or whatever. So, and then you've got a guy like Mike Mitchell who's redshirting. So then you're left, like we said, Joe Berger, Cameron Williams.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
And you also saw it on the special teams where he said, you know, there's five guys on offense covering punts and they have to teach him how to tackle.
Right.
You know, so I thought it was interesting that Meyer said it might be a tactical error having redshirted, you know, Eli Apple and Gerrion Conley and Mike Mitchell, you know, because of the special teams and also the linebacker issues they've had this year. But I don't think you throw them in there against Illinois in the second half, you know, because, I mean, they weren't in a serious dire situation, but also even if they were in a dire situation, do you is a freshman going to do you any good to throw him out there anyway?
Right. But we'll see going forward. We mentioned Muhort. He said that he'll be 100% by Saturday, just a little bit sore. Bosa, I believe Marcus said he was hopeful that he would be good to go Saturday. Just has a sore neck. He said there was no structural damage to it.
Yeah, I think he said on Monday, I don't worry about Joey Bosa.
Right.
You know, so.
I mean, and that's telling too. I mean, Bosa had 2.5 sacks, I think, before he left the game.
Well, you look, Illinois scored 7 points with Joey Bosa on the field and, you know, 3 touchdowns with him off the field, basically, you know, the offense. So, I mean, is that a coincidence?
Is Joey Bosa their best defensive lineman?
He might be their most impactful, but, you know, because defensive tackles do different things.
Right.
You know, they're asked to do different things.
It's hard to
but so are strong side defensive ends for Ohio State don't necessarily always crank up, get these sack numbers, you know.
Right.
They're there to contain, hold the edge, and, you know, if they can get a pass rush, that's fine. But, I mean, he collapses. I mean, he collapses an entire side of the line.
Yeah.
So, man, just imagine him next year. I mean, I keep saying that, but, I mean, what's the limit on that guy? Where's his ceiling?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's right now one of their most impactful players on defense.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Shazier and Roby.
Yeah.
Barnett, maybe.
Well, I mean, because if you look at Adolphus Washington was going to be an All-Big Ten guy this year by a lot.
Yeah.
You know, the preseason magazines all had him there, and I mean, he's just completely overshadowed now by Joey Bosa, and it's noticeable when Bosa isn't out there.
Yeah. Curtis Grant, Meyer said he was 50-50.
Yeah.
Questionable. He didn't dress for the game on Saturday. He had the ankle issue and then also something with his back. And then Josh Perry's recovering from his slipping on ice. I don't understand how these things happen. Like, these things, I always hear about, like, these like weird injuries that keep players out.
Yeah.
But, like, these don't happen to regular people.
Well, and you think, like, we've all, I think, fallen and slipped on ice, you know, but you have a way of, like, not hitting your head.
Right.
And, I mean, these are, like, tremendous athletes and tremendous condition. How could they not, you know, protect themselves?
Like, that sounds like something, like, I mean, that sounds like a problem for, like, an elderly person, you know? Like, oh, they fell and they hit their head. Like, that doesn't happen to, like, you know, a fit college athlete, you know? That's what I don't get.
I'm puzzled by it.
You always hear these, like, these injuries, like bowling injuries, other types of injuries, like swimming pool injuries, ice accidents.
Jordan Hall stepping on glass.
Stepping on glass, yeah. Like, wear shoes, dude. Come on.
Like, what, Ken Griffey Jr. one year, like, slipped in the shower and hurt himself? And
Ken Griffey Jr., like, would slip anywhere.
He would slip on a rubber mat.
We got to talk to Christian Bryant yesterday for the first time in a long time. Since before the injury, he had a lot of interesting stuff to say. I thought it was interesting that he still doesn't know whether he'd be eligible for a red shirt or even whether they're going to try to get one. Just because, like, I mean, you think it, by this point, it's been almost 2 months. And every time Meyer was outside, he kind of was like, I don't know. Just kind of makes me seem like it's not happening.
Yeah.
Because nobody's really that interested in it.
Right, exactly. You know, I'm sure Meyer would love it, but, you know, it doesn't seem like something that, you know, Christian Bryant isn't too interested in, and I don't see it happening either. They talk about, well, maybe because he's played a lot, and the one season he missed, I think, as a freshman, he played like five or eight games, and then this year he played, you know, what, 5 games or...
He played into the 5th game.
So, I mean, yeah, he might not have 4 total seasons, you know, under his belt or whatever, or maybe more than 3 or whatever, but he's played so much in the 2 games where he missed time that it would surprise me if he were granted.
Yeah. And, I mean, the NCAA rules is that you have to have played in fewer than 30% of the games,
mm-hmm.
which by playing in 5, and that doesn't count a bowl game, but it would count a league championship game. So it would be 5 out of 13 likely if they go to the Big Ten title game. So that's more than 30%. So he doesn't qualify for that. But they could, what is it, like a hardship waiver or something?
Right.
Where, like, it's like a, you know, so like a circumstance that they will... in which they'd allow him to be granted a 5th year. But like I said, I don't see it happening, number one. And if it does happen, I'm not sure Christian Bryant would take it.
Yeah, because, I mean, he talked about yesterday, you know, it didn't even sound like they were for sure going to apply.
Right. It sounded like we might apply.
But then he was also saying, you know, I'd want to know if it was granted before the bowl game.
So he would play in the game.
So, you know, he could decide whether or not to play in the game or come back.
Right.
So it seems like he's going to let them apply for him, you know, and whatever happens, happens. But yeah. then he'll make his decision, you know, once, like, he's letting them decide to go ahead and file a waiver. He's like, okay with that. You do what you want. But then when, you know, the real time to decide will be when, you know, is he going to be healthy enough?
Right.
Because I think if he's healthy enough, and I don't think he will be, but
I don't either.
If he's healthy enough, he would definitely choose the bowl game over coming back.
I think so. You know? I don't think it's gonna, I mean, because he even said, the way he said it yesterday was, I don't know if that's, we were going to be able to get one, but if not, I'm not going to be that mad about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which to me sounds like, and then he again mentioned later, like, if that happens, I'll have to talk to my family whether I should come back or go straight to the league. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The way he said it.
I mean, you think, you had senioritis, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all have it, it. So, I mean, just imagine, you know, you're ready, this is your last year, then, you know, the possibility comes up, like, I may have to do this all again.
Yeah.
You know, and, or, you know, I can just move on and take the next step and go get paid to play football, which, you know, I've been doing forever.
Getting paid to play football?
Well, playing football, doing that forever.
Right.
You think only getting paid for a recent, you know.
Do you think he's got a future in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, he's a playmaker, he's around the ball, he's smart, he knows where the ball is. But I'm a terrible talent evaluator when it comes to the NFL, so I'm like the Bengals, the Browns, in that way. Maybe it's the Ohioan in me.
Yeah, it must be. All right, we won't hold you to it then. Just moving on real quick, we mentioned Dontre Wilson just got that one touch. Herman said yesterday that he deserves to be more involved, but it's just that when you give Wilson the ball, you take it away from Braxton, Hyde, Philly, all the playmakers. So do you see, we've talked about this a little bit, but do you see him being more involved, or do you see them kind of sticking with Hyde as the games get tougher here down the stretch, excluding this weekend?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he got the start, you know.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So it told me that they wanted to get him the ball this week, but then, you know, maybe things didn't happen the way they wanted, so they had to, you know, rely on Hyde.
Right.
I think he'll get the ball quite a bit, you know, against Indiana, because I think he was pretty, he got his one carry in that game, like in the later in the game, and then they pulled him up to the sideline right away, right after that play, and he was pretty upset about it. So I think they might sort of want to get him more involved to kind of cool him down a little bit, you know, sort of like when they want to reward the tight ends, and
right,
you know, they try to keep people happy, and I think they might be in that mode a little bit against Indiana.
And this has, like, been a reoccurring theme all season, because everybody wanted to see what Dontre Wilson can do, and he hasn't really got that involved in the offense. Meyer said they'd get him more involved. For a couple of games, it seemed like that was actually happening, and then now back to this, it seems like he's not as involved. Do you think the offense could be better if he was involved? Is there another dimension to this offense that they're not utilizing, because they're not utilizing Wilson?
I think the interesting thing yesterday when Tom Herman said, they thought they would need him to win games.
Right.
You know, they would need his impact in order to win games. And they found out that they didn't, which reduces his role and their need to have him out there. You know, you like what he can do, but right now, I mean, they're doing just fine without him. You know, they're setting records, but, I mean, would he open more? You know, they've got so many guys who can do things that, you know, they all open things up in their own way, and we've seen him have that impact before.
Right.
You know, so I think he does open things up more if he's out there, but, you know, things are pretty open as they are right now.
The fact that Herman said that about they thought they wouldn't, what does that tell you about what they thought of the guys they have going into the season? Like, did they not think some of these guys were going to be as good as they are?
Right. You think about, like, I think Devin Smith and Philly Brown and Evan Spencer and Chris Fields, they're all pretty good. I think they want to improve that talent over the years. But with the way that Philly Brown has played and with the way Evan Spencer blocks, it's like those are tough. I mean, Philly Brown's in the H right now. Evan Spencer, you can't take off the field because of his blocking.
Right.
Same way with Jeff Heuerman.
Maybe those aren't quite the things they expected.
Right. I think
to get this season.
Yeah. Maybe they thought they'd have to do it in different ways.
Yeah.
To impact the running game in different ways.
Open it up different ways.
Right now, because even Meyer said he's never seen perimeter blocking like the Buckeyes have done.
Heuerman and Spencer, yeah,
so
specifically.
Those are two guys you'd have to take off the field maybe to get a guy like Dontre Wilson in there with Philly Brown, because you want Philly Brown to be out there as well. But right now the blocking is so superb that they don't need this east-west thing necessarily like they thought they would to open up the middle.
Right. You mentioned setting records. That was a 22nd consecutive win Saturday, which ties the school record. They can go for 23, the all-time school record, this Saturday. I mean, it's kind of crazy. It's 100 and whatever years of playing Ohio State football. As good as Ohio State football, as dominant as it has been over all those seasons, 23 would be the longest win streak, you know? It's kind of weird.
I think, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, they used to only play 8, 9, 10 games a
right,
year.
Right, but still.
But it's still 22, you know, going to be possibly maybe 23. I mean, it's still a significant number no matter how you look at it because, like you said, it's, you know, it's been forever.
And, I mean, think about all the great Ohio State football teams. Mm-hmm. Like, this one compares with all of them, you know? And it's going to surpass all of them, most likely on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then also this record's been probably more of a sign of the times and of the coach, but they set the all time school record for touchdowns in a season on Saturday. I think it was like 67 or 68, mm-hmm. one of those. But so I mean, and they do that with that was the 10th game of the season.
So I mean, that's a legit stat.
That's a legit, yeah. But that's also, you know, a sign of the times. But it's impressive nonetheless. Elsewhere in the Big Ten. Michigan State beat Nebraska, kind of a shootout, which I was a little bit surprised, more so than we thought.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't see how Nebraska was going to be able to move the ball, and they ran it pretty well.
They did. What does that tell you about Michigan State's defense? Anything?
I thought it sucks. I think it shows that, you know, there are areas that can be attacked. I mean, Indiana did it a little bit, you know, for the first quarter against them, but then it was shut down. But, you know, I mean, things can happen.
Right. So let's see. Michigan State needs one more win to clinch the Legends division. They're 6-0 in conference, so one more win clinches it. They got Northwestern on Saturday, which, like you said, is one of those classic trap games for Michigan State.
You think Michigan went to Northwestern and won last week.
Right.
Just imagine if Michigan State goes there and gets tripped up. I mean, that's the ultimate Sparty. You know, Sparty no situation right there. Right.
And then the week after, they close the regular season with Minnesota, who is now ranked in the BCS. Mm-hmm. They've reeled off 4 straight wins. They're 8-2 overall. I don't think anybody saw that one coming. I mean, we talked about the Legends division at the beginning of the year. We talked about it's wide open. Michigan State, Michigan, Nebraska, Northwestern. We didn't mention Minnesota. But, I mean, as it is right now, if Minnesota wins out and Michigan State loses on Saturday, Minnesota would clinch, right? Because they would have the tiebreaker win over.
Yeah, so Michigan State has to lose out.
Yeah, if Michigan State loses out and Minnesota wins out, Minnesota would win. So it's still possible Ohio State plays Minnesota.
Yeah, because Minnesota would have the tiebreaker over both Nebraska and Michigan State.
Right.
That would be impressive.
Yeah. Nonetheless.
And disastrous for Ohio State.
Exactly. I mean, you said before we started that Ohio State needs Michigan State only needs one win, mm-hmm. but Ohio State needs Michigan State to win both games.
Yeah, exactly. Ohio State needs Michigan State to win out more than Michigan State does.
Exactly.
So,
I mean, Michigan State jumped 3 spots. They're now number 13 in the BCS. And we talked about this. If they win these last 2 games convincingly, and that includes a win over a top 25 team, assuming Minnesota stays there by the time that game comes around. Maybe Michigan State's a top 10 team if some of these teams fall. I mean, they jumped 3 spots last week. I don't see why they can't jump 3 more in the next 2 weeks.
No, I agree. You know, Auburn's sitting at 6. If they lose to, you know, Alabama, they might not even make it to Alabama with one loss. I mean, they'll be dropping out. Stanford at 9 is still a joke to me.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State's at 10. They might lose this weekend, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how Stanford. You can't put a 2-loss BCS team in front of another 1-loss BCS team.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got Stanford, South Carolina, and Texas A&M, all with 2 losses, all ahead of Michigan State.
Stanford, what was the other one?
Stanford, South Carolina, and Texas A&M.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, we were talking yesterday that if Michigan State wins out, they're going to be a 10, 11, 12 range at the worst. Would that be the toughest opponent of all the conference title games for any of these top teams?
Yeah, I think not only would it be the toughest, which is, you know, maybe based on opinion, but they'd be the highest ranked, don't you think?
Because the other ones are terrible.
Yeah, Florida State would be playing Duke or Georgia Tech or Virginia Tech, and that's nothing. You know,
Alabama would be playing Missouri
or South Carolina.
What's Missouri ranked?
They're in the top 10.
They're in the top 10?
They're number eight.
Number eight. So, I don't know. Who do they got left, you know?
Missouri closes. They go two at Ole Miss, and then they host Texas A&M. So, they're going to lose one of those, I would
think.
They
probably will. But it's not like they got, like, a one versus two in the, or what, you know, one versus number three like they have in the past with the SEC title game. So, I mean, it's not like that's, you could argue this, but it's not like that's that much better than.
No, and, you know, Oregon would have Arizona State or UCLA. Or
which is.
Maybe USC.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not better than Michigan State. And I think the only argument would be maybe in Missouri.
I think that's the only argument, but I think there is an argument for Michigan State. Mm-hmm. Is the point, which is just funny considering how terrible the Big Ten is. That
yeah, and it just it gets disrespected and dismissed, and yet at the end, it could be the biggest game of all of the conference championships.
I mean, I don't think there's any arguing the Big Ten top to bottom isn't great,
right?
You know, but at the top, if you've got maybe two top 10 teams, and then you've got two others ranked in the top 25. I think that's actually stronger than we thought it would be coming into the year.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, who would have ever foreseen Minnesota doing what they did? It's just unfortunate that, like, a Michigan team that beat Minnesota has completely, tanked and gone away, or else there'd be even more, teams at the top.
Think about Wisconsin if they had beaten Arizona State. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't. I mean, you can say that they could have won, they should have won, but the fact is they didn't.
Right.
They could have put themselves in a better position to win, but. I mean, if they had, they're up there near the top 10 as well.
Which we talked, like, I think every week that Urban Meyer said people would recognize Wisconsin for what they are as the season moves on. And I think, has he been wrong about that? He said they'd be one of the top, they're one of the top 10 teams in the nation. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he continually says that they'd be one of the top two or three teams in any conference, which, I mean, you could argue, of course, but maybe he's right. I don't know. BCS. Alabama and Florida State remain 1-2. Florida State closes the gap a little bit after they beat Syracuse, like 70 gazillion to 3 on Saturday. Alabama, not super convincing against Mississippi State. I don't know, did you watch that game? See any of it?
No, here and there, just, but.
I didn't see any of it.
I tune in, because I had it on, but it was on the second TV, so
right.
I would watch it once Mississippi State would get inside the 10 and, choke something away, and then I'd just, dismiss it and go on to something else.
I mean, it was 20-7. Was it close at all? I don't know. I mean,
it was close. I mean, Mississippi State blew some opportunities. I mean, they could have put another 10 or 13 points on the board pretty easily. They just didn't execute. I mean, they were down there in the red zone to do it, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like Mississippi State. I mean, what are they, 4-6?
Right.
So it's like, I mean, they can't be that much better than Illinois or Syracuse or any of those other teams that the top teams were playing on Saturday, and I don't know.
The sad thing is Alabama only lost, I think, two first-place votes in the AP.
Yeah, that blows my mind. Because we talked about this yesterday. I think we both said, or not yesterday, last week, we both said we would have a Florida State number one. Just, I mean, Mississippi State is 1-5 in the SEC.
Yeah, and people say, well, you have to give, Alabama the credit based on their entire, past two or three seasons.
I hate that.
Yeah, I mean, this is this season. You can give Alabama all the credit you want, but give some respect to Florida State for what they've done now.
I mean, Florida State is just annihilating everybody.
Yeah.
They don't have a close... Let me bring up their schedule here. But I don't think they have a close win on their schedule. Maybe one game that was like... They won one game 48-34.
Yeah. Was that Boston College?
Boston College. But that's still two touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Every other game they've won like... I mean, back-to-back games, they've won 59-3. The only thing about the ACC is the ACC doesn't seem as good as it did. I mean, Miami is not a good football team anymore.
No. Miami got rolled by Duke.
They've lost three in a row.
You can say all you want about Duke and how great it is. It's Duke.
Duke is not good.
No. I mean, Duke can have success in the ACC like Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech can because it's the ACC.
Right. The thing about Florida State, though, even though maybe the ACC, I think there's an argument that the Big Ten is as good, if not better, than the ACC, but the difference is Florida State is rolling everybody.
Right, and we talk about the top of the conferences. I mean, the ACC has Florida State and Clemson.
In the top 10.
Yeah, and that's, Ohio State, or the Big Ten, for, all of their flaws, I think you'd say they have three very solid teams at the top. I mean, do you put, who is the ACC's third team? Is it Duke?
See, that's the thing.
Virginia Tech.
Georgia Tech.
I mean, I think Boston College would even...
They're going to annihilate somebody in the ACC championship game.
Yeah, Duke might be able to score some points, but they would need, you know, 50 more just to get close.
Yeah, I don't see Florida State losing. Maybe at Florida. I mean, Florida's got a good defense, decent defense. Maybe rivalry game at Florida, maybe.
I mean, Florida has the defense, a defense, which...
They have a defense.
Is always an equalizer, but... I mean, how many points would Florida State need to score in that game? 20?
Yeah.
23?
Right. That offense is miserable.
Yeah.
So Alabama might be the best hope for the Buckeyes to lose. They show maybe a little bit of vulnerability on Saturday. I don't think they're going to lose this weekend. They got Chattanooga.
Don't sleep on the Chattanooga.
If they lost to Chattanooga, they drop out of the top 25.
They might drop out of the top 3. Where do you think they would end if they did lose to Chattanooga?
Legitimately?
Yeah. And, you know, say it's like a, you know, 20-17. It's a close loss. It's a good loss, you know, clean loss. But yeah,
part of me says, you know, they definitely drop out of top 5, in my mind. I could see them falling, you know, 9 or 10. You lose to Chattanooga?
Yeah, I think it would be tough. People would be so torn. It's like, you know, you have to drop them out of the top 10, but it's still Alabama.
You know what would happen? If Chattanooga beats Alabama, you know who the new number one is?
Chattanooga. The fighting noobs.
They're not even in the same subdivision, but I think Chattanooga could be the new number one if they beat Alabama.
They would deserve it. I mean, they beat Alabama. Right. That's got to count for something. Mississippi State couldn't.
Yeah, you're right. But they do have Auburn, number 6 Auburn, the same day as the Ohio State Michigan game, the 30th. That's a rivalry game. It's at Auburn. Is there any chance Auburn knocks off Alabama and does the Buckeyes a huge favor?
I think there's a chance because Auburn is, you know, their offense is constant. You know, it's always attacking. It's putting pressure on the defense. The problem, which we talked about earlier, is they can't throw the ball very well. And a one-dimensional offense against Alabama is going to suffer. And Auburn likes to do this wide stuff. And, you know, Alabama's speed on defense can negate that. If they can run up the middle, then, you know, then there's a possibility. I think the best thing for Ohio State in this sense is that Alabama is going to have to face most likely 2 spread teams, you know, Auburn, and then right after
Missouri.
That, maybe Missouri. And they don't necessarily like facing that type of – it doesn't necessarily suit them. So I think there's a glimmer of hope, but, you know, it might just be, you know, train at the other end of the tunnel, as they say.
Yeah. You think Auburn's a legit top 10 team, though? I mean, they have one loss. They lost to LSU. They beat Georgia, but
yeah.
They beat Texas A&M. They beat Ole Miss.
I mean, they're giving up a lot of points too.
They are giving up a lot of points.
Who would you put in front of them? I guess has to be, you know, the question. I mean, it can be debated. They've got a good record in the SEC.
Yeah, it's
so
tough. Yeah.
I mean, they're 6-1.
No, I think you're right. It'll be fun to watch. Maybe they'll give them a game. Maybe they'll beat them. We'll see. Anything else about the VCS?
I think we were talking with this with a couple of people yesterday, but when Ohio State gets jumped by Baylor.
Oh, we didn't mention that, right?
Because I'll go ahead and expect Baylor to beat Oklahoma State, and then that means they will jump Ohio State.
Maybe.
Well, I know you have the inside information on that.
Yeah, it is what it is. But, I mean, okay, so Baylor, you said Baylor has the showdown number 10 Oklahoma State on the road. That's this Saturday, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So if Baylor does beat them, I mean, they're only .0013 back of Ohio State. They jumped to number 4 after Stanford lost. Logic seems to tell that they would jump Ohio State.
Right.
Jerry Palm, the BCS expert guy for CBS, keeps telling me that Ohio State would hold them off.
Yeah.
I mean, he said last week, like, unequivocally, like, if Baylor was going to jump Ohio State, they would have done it last week when they beat Oklahoma and when Ohio State was on bye. They're not going to do it. And I asked him again, and he stand by his statement. So, but everybody else seems to think that Baylor is going to jump Ohio State, and I can't blame him because it sure seems like they're going to.
Yeah, well, you know, like we mentioned this before, but the problem with predicting the BCS is predicting the voters.
Right.
And I think maybe he didn't. I think he, with his prediction, he did not predict the voters would jump Baylor, or would you know, jump Baylor over Ohio State, and, you know, that's sort of starting to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and if the coaches do it, then, you know, BCS is gone.
Right.
You know, because then all of the math will work out in Baylor's favor.
Right. So back to what you were saying, though, if Baylor jumps Ohio State this weekend, just for the sake of argument, not saying it's going to happen, Plus, they might lose anyway, yep. So we might not have to think about this. But if they jump them, then are they the number three for good, or does Ohio State have a chance to jump them back, say, if Michigan State wins out and Ohio State would have beat Michigan State in a title game? Because, that's the interesting thing.
Yeah, and it's an extra win for the Buckeyes. It's a win against what would then be a better opponent than, you know...
At least as good of an opponent of anybody that Baylor has beaten.
Do you think voters would jump Ohio State back?
Well, that's the interesting thing yesterday, because this is what we were talking about, is in the BCS, it's always been like you stay where you are until you lose. Mm-hmm. But now that's not really been the case this year. And then if Baylor jumps Ohio State, then would that start being the case again? Or would
exactly. Does it revert back to what it had always been after, you know, finally Baylor gets where the voters wanted them to be, you know, where they've been working them towards? I mean,
yeah.
I don't see voters jumping Ohio State back up.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, do you think Baylor's going to win this week? You said you did. I kind of think they're going to lose. I don't know.
My thing with Oklahoma State, and it's a personal vendetta that I have against them because, you know, I drafted their running backs in the second round, and he is terrible. And
that is some fantasy bitterness right there.
Yeah, and...
I hold that, too.
Yeah, and I, you know, had to spot start their quarterback 1 week, and he was terrible.
Yeah.
And plus, I mean, they lost to West Virginia. Oklahoma State did. So, I mean, even if Baylor beats Oklahoma State, how good of a win can it be if you lost to West Virginia, who lost to Kansas?
Yeah.
I mean, that's... Sure, it's at Oklahoma State, but he lost to West Virginia.
Transitive property right there.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I don't know. We'll see.
Hey, if people are going to use it to say that Baylor's win over Buffalo was bigger than Ohio State's win, you know?
That's common opponent, though, which is a little bit different. I know one win that will not get the Buckeyes any points in the BCS will be over Indiana this Saturday. Let's see. Indiana's got a decent pass offense. They were blasted by Wisconsin on Saturday, 50-something to 3, I think 51-3 or something like that. What do you think about this game? Does Indiana have any chance to kind of do what Illinois did this past Saturday?
Yeah, I think they have some opportunity. I thought it was telling when maybe it was Corey Lindsley yesterday who said that last year when they played Illinois quit, and they sort of expected that to happen again this week, last week, and it didn't.
Right.
And then because he was talking about last year's game against Indiana, the Hoosiers never quit. So I would not expect the Buckeyes to think that the Hoosiers would quit this time.
And they quit on Saturday, though.
Yeah. Well,
51-3.
Right, but I'm saying that...
No, I see what you're saying, though.
They've had an experience with the Hoosiers not quitting, so they won't expect it to happen, and they'll, you know... The foot on the pedal that they want to keep down that they keep talking about, and the killer instinct that is overused. So I think that bodes well for Ohio State. You know, yeah, Indiana might score some points, but I think Ohio State won't let up in trying to score theirs.
Yeah, and the thing that's kind of interesting, too, is after the game, Urban said that he thought, other than the linebackers being out and all that stuff and the weather and blah, 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 he thought the team was too focused on the national picture and wasn't focused enough on the game at hand. That during the bye week they all start. I mean, you get on Twitter and you see all the Ohio State players saying "Go LSU." You know, they're obviously thinking about it, whether they say it or not. You know, on Mondays and Wednesdays. But so, and he said that he thought that was kind of the issue, one of the issues. So we'll see if you know they're thinking about Chattanooga this week or if they're thinking about Indiana this week.
Do you think their offensive success in the last few weeks made them think that it would just come easily against Illinois, and that, you know, sometimes you can let your focus wander a little bit?
Yeah, maybe that ties into it.
Offense is so easy right now.
Yeah, I mean, they thought, you know, they could just go out there and, you know.
They still scored 51 offensive points or whatever.
51, yeah. So, but with that being said, you don't think they could have scored more?
Yeah, I think they left, you know, 4 touchdowns.
I mean, how many 3-and-outs did they have?
Yeah, exactly.
Bunch.
I mean, they punted, what, 6 times?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's sort of ridiculous.
Yeah. Cameron Johnson was happy. I'm sure. I mean, dude, his punts were flying because of the wind. He had like 70-yard punts.
Yeah, you think this week is what? He tweeted that his mom's going to be in town to watch him play. He might not get to play at all.
He won't. Last time he said he had family in town was. What game was that? Was that the Penn State game? Most of them.
I don't know.
It was the last home game, and he didn't punt once. It's like, ooh.
They should have redshirted him.
They should have at least sent him out there to punt once, like on second down or something.
Maybe have him hold some extra points or something.
Yeah. Oh, whatever. Ohio State has won 17 straight against the Hoosiers. Indiana's last one was in 1988. We were saying they beat them 3 out of 4 years in the late 80s. That was a sad...
Well, Ohio State only had one win out of the
so they didn't play 4 years?
There was a tie.
Oh, there was a tie?
Yeah.
Okay, so Ohio State beat Indiana once in 4 years.
Yeah.
So they lost twice, they tied once. That's, yeah. I mean, a tie against Indiana is a loss.
Exactly.
So they lost Indiana 3 out of 4 years in the late 80s. Those were like the dark days for Ohio State football, I guess. That was before I was born. Gary remembers it, though. I don't know. Anything else about Indiana?
What's the line on that? 33?
It's 30-something, yeah, which is the third straight week. I wonder if that's ever happened. Third straight week, Ohio State's been up favored by more than 30 points against a Big Ten opponent.
I might be able to get you that answer during the basketball podcast.
Okay. Well, we can work on that.
Are you going... Will Ohio State cover?
Gosh, no, I killed everybody last week because I told everybody Ohio State would cover and they didn't. Well, I'm glad, you know, we never actually wanted them to go out and bet. It was just like, you know, so I didn't really lose anybody any money.
But don't you think, I mean, how many points do you think Indiana's going to score in this game?
You put me on the spot. If I had to guess right now, I'd say somewhere in the teens.
Well, if that would happen, then yeah, I would go with Ohio State to cover. But if, say...
You think they're going more than that, don't you? Yeah, I could see it too.
I think maybe low 20s.
Low 20s.
So then you're asking Ohio State to score 60 again?
To cover 30? Well, if they score in the low 20s, so you can get upper 50s. I actually liked last week's line more.
So did I.
I don't know. I think this one's actually a better line.
This one seems a little too dangerous.
It is a little dangerous. If it's 33...
Are we like gun-shy from what happened
last week? We're a little gun-shy because... I mean, I was saying put the line at 50 last week.
Yeah, you were way wrong on that.
I was. I blame the win, man. Come on.
See, I told you. It was effective.
Yeah.
1998, Ohio State had they were 36-point favorite, 38-point favorite, and 29-point favorite against Illinois, Minnesota, and Northwestern.
98? 98. Oh, 98. Which I was going to say, because they lost in 88. 98. Well, that makes sense.
And then in 96, which was their other really good offense, was a 35-point favorite, 29-point favorite, and 35 against Minnesota, Illinois, and Indiana.
Was that the same three teams?
No, Northwestern was in 98. Yeah, that looks like, I don't see in the last 20 years, certainly, no straight three in a row 30-point favorites.
We've gone way too long on this podcast, but... Before we wrap this up, we cannot wrap this podcast up without talking about, you know, the Big Ten game of the week this week, which is I want to know who you got, Illinois versus Purdue.
You know, I was thinking about that. Illinois is a 7-point favorite, and I was wondering who this looks worse for. That, you know, is it worse for Purdue to be, you know, an underdog by a touchdown against Illinois, or is it worse for Illinois to only be favored by a touchdown against Purdue?
I think it's pretty bad for both.
Yeah,
I mean. They're selling, what are tickets for that game going like 25 cents or something on StubHub? For real. Look it up. Everybody should, you know, we should go.
At that point, why do you even sell? Just take them.
Yeah.
You know, you sell 100 and you get,
I don't get it
25
either.
Bucks.
But that should be a good one. At Purdue? So what?
Be Purdue's first Big Ten win. Well, it's going to be somebody's first Big Ten
win. Exactly. It's going to be Illinois' first in like 3 years.
This is not the game of the Big Ten. This is the game of the week.
I know.
In the nation.
Is game day going to be there? Thought I heard they were. Who you got, though?
I trust Daryl Hazel more than I trust Tim Beckman by a lot, but I think Illinois has more offensive weapons. But I'll go with Purdue just because Illinois is terrible.
You're going Purdue? Oh, man, I'll go Illinois. Right. Purdue is terrible in every aspect. At least Illinois has a decent offense.
I think Illinois will make more mistakes,
You think that
Illinois will do more to hurt themselves than maybe Purdue will?
I know. You think that, you know, that home field advantage with that
Rockies
crowd is going to push Purdue.
I always go with the home field.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll see. I can't wait. What time is that? I hope that's a noon game.
You're going to make me look.
On a Friday.
Let's see. Indiana, Purdue. Purdue at Illinois is a noon game. Right. No, it's on a Saturday. yeah. All right. We've gone way too long. If you didn't get enough of us on this podcast, though, which I don't know how that's possible, we're doing a basketball podcast right after this. So until then, see ya.
Have a good one.